closer.
You're listening to the Untitled Car Show in partnership with RightFootDown.com. Visit RightFootDown for your daily automotive fix. If you enjoyed today's program, please tell a friend. It's the best way to support this show. If you want to visit the archives, go to YouTube and search for Untitled Car Show. That'll bring you to the archived episodes. If you want to follow this show, just search for Untitled Car Show on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can always send an email to the show at untitledcarshow@rightfootdown.com. We're so glad you decided to spend the next hour or so with us. Without further ado, let's get into today's program. Hello, welcome to Untitled Car Show. I have Will Clavey of Clavey's Corner, and I think I said that right. Did I say that right, Will?
Yep, you got it.
All right. He is the land speed record holder in a Daewoo. If you listen to the other episode with him, you'll know what that's about. He does some fantastic articles on Clavey's Corner, and he's been into some new and exciting stuff. So I'm very excited to have Will back on the show. Will, how are you doing this evening?
Been great, Ike. Thanks for having me again. Always a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a pleasure having you. I think we should just get right into something here. The Volvo you recently drove, tell us about that.
Yes, the Volvo S90, right?
Yes.
That was a great car. Mm-hmm. I gotta tell you, Ike, well, I don't know if you read, for people who read the article, I'm just totally in love with Volvo these days. I mean, they're really kicking ass. And the S90 is a beautiful, luxurious, innovative, efficient car, and it's so Swedish, it's so Volvo. It really feels great to see them back in action. Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see an article, and I really appreciate the title of the article, that you got more attention in that than in a supercar.
That's right. We drove it up to Quebec City during Winter Carnival. Every winter in Quebec and the capital, they have a carnival going on, and we went there originally for, you know, the old architecture of old Quebec. We thought it fit well with the car, and it was insane the amount of people that were eyeing out the car, you know, giving us thumbs up, taking photos, you know, telling us what a cool looking car, it looks great, and it really attracts a lot of attention. It was the same thing with the XC90 when it came out, and now there's this whole kind of aura around Volvo, right? I mean, I think you're yourself a Volvo fan, and just to see them making this beautiful car, and just knowing, you know, it's just Scandinavian, and they're back. You know, we know that Volvo almost died when Ford let go of them. Of course, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's a Chinese company now, and it's not Swedish anymore. But no, it's very, very Swedish, and just a beautiful automobile.
No, it's exactly what you want in a car. It's, you have the Swedish in charge of design, manufacturer. You know, they basically get to put their stamp of approval on everything, and then the Chinese are basically just fronting money. Now,
exactly. Volvo is more Swedish than ever. Everything is still, well, they are speaking of opening up an assembly line in China. I think that's already done, or they're in the process of doing that. But and we are going to start seeing some Chinese-built Volvos, but it's still all the R&D and all the development and all the ideas and the design is so Swedish. The interiors, just the interior of that thing, Ike, it's mind-blowing how attractive it is and comfortable and so just so smooth. It has its faults. It's not a perfect car. You know, there were some things about the S90 that could have been better. Tire roll was very loud, and that four-cylinder engine it's innovative. It's really, you know, the idea of having a 2-liter turbocharged and supercharged engine that pumps out 316 horsepower, and, you know, that it's extremely fuel efficient. That's great. Unfortunately, being a four-cylinder, though, it sounds a bit crude. It sounds a bit harsh. You know, I do miss the old T6, the old six-cylinder Volvo. Even the five-cylinders felt a lot smoother than this four-cylinder. But, you know, overall, it's a great automobile. Like, you know, I'm nitpicking because it's a great car.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's that thing you really want in a car nowadays. Like, when we were last on the show, you know, we talked about the Mitsubishi Mirage and The Mirage is kind of the exact opposite of the Volvo, where you really have to struggle to find what's good about the Mirage, and that's kind of too easy as an automotive reviewer, and the Volvo makes it much more of a mental exercise to figure out, you know, what's wrong with it and what could be improved and where does the competition have the edge over it, you know?
Right. That's a good point. And I think what why I like the Volvo so much and why I hate the Mirage so much, I personally have a lot of respect. When I sit inside a car and I feel that the engineers and that the car maker actually worked hard to making it good, when you feel that they cared, it's like, okay, you actually feel that they did everything they could to make it the car as comfortable as possible, drive as great as possible. You know, you sit inside a Volvo, the new Volvos, and you can tell that Volvo actually gave a crap. While the Mirage, it's like they're making fun of us. It's like, you know, we don't care about our consumers. Here's a cheap car, you know, have a nice day. So
there is that aspect to it. It's the, like, two extremes of car manufacturing. I definitely agree with you on that. Like, I don't know, there's, tell me how you feel about this, because when it comes down to, you know, brand loyalties and, you know, what you like in a car and what you don't like in a car, you know, you can appreciate what the Germans do or what the Americans do or the Japanese when they build these luxury cars. But there is something about Swedish, like, well-built Scandinavian cars that it's luxurious, but you can't quite put your finger on. It's not so much each individual piece, it's more the sum of its own parts, as opposed to, like, a German brand, I feel, is always trying to force down your throat, like, we got leather, and this is what you want, isn't it? Like, or does the Swedish give you what you actually need?
Yeah, well, the Swedish have a way of making things look sexy. Everything looks sexy in a Swedish car. Everything looks beautiful and pretty and attractive. I mean, the infotainment system in the S90. Have you seen the infotainment systems in the new Volvos, like in the X90 and the S90?
I have been in the cars. I think I've seen the infotainment system on, but it was at the auto show, so I didn't get much chance to play with it. So
just the navigation system. I never thought I'd say this about a car. It's just so pretty. I mean, this week I just got out of the Infiniti QX30, which is just an awful, cynical car. Just Badge engineering at its worst. And I was just talking with Patrick George about that actually this weekend. It's going on Jalopnik, that one. And we're just laughing about the QX30. It's just that's an example of a car maker not giving a shit about consumers. It's a rebadged Mercedes GLA, and it stinks Mercedes GLA all over. And, you know, talking about infotainment system, get out of that Volvo. I could have spent like an entire evening just staring at that navigation system. It's just so pretty. And then you get back in Infiniti, it's disgusting, it's awful. It's anyways. So it's funny how, you know, you go from one car maker to another, and it's almost as if they're talking to you. You know, it's like, oh, we didn't give a shit about this car, we just need to sell them. Or in a situation like the S90, it feels like it was built by humans for humans, and it feels great. It feels great as a car enthusiast. You sit in a car like that, and you want to give it a good review because you feel like they actually cared about you. So.
So you touched on something there briefly in there that I think we should get into off the get-go here. So you came on the show, I believe, in late October, early November.
Yes.
And there's been some exciting developments in, you know, your professional career since then. You know, you're talking about putting stuff up on Jalopnik.
Yes. It's been quite a ride. So Jalopnik Inc. arrived in my life. Well, it's not as if I didn't expect it. I knew I would work there, but I've always kind of aimed to eventually write for Jalopnik. And it's been a great adventure so far. I'm officially the Canadian contributor now at Jalopnik. I officially have my name on the masthead. So, and, you know, working with Patrick George has been great. He's a great guy. He's fun to work with. He's a busy man. I don't know how he does it. I have a theory that he probably cloned himself or something, because he's all over the place, everywhere, all the time. And he scans through everything. I mean, everything goes through Patrick before going on Jalopnik. He's really the one steering the ship. And, you know, I love it so far. Yeah, it's been great. I've done five reviews. There's another one coming out. That Infiniti is going to be on there this week. And I'm heading over to Toronto, actually, this week with Miles for the Canadian Auto Show. And we'll be pulling out some uniquely Canadian content from Toronto that was going to be going on July opening. So that should be pretty exciting as well.
So you went from, you know, being an independent, working for yourself, kind of working with the dealerships when we last spoke, and now getting actual, like, full-blown press cars, you know, through Jalopnik, you know. Do you think your opinion of, like, how you review cars has kind of changed since then? Because before you were in this kind of pseudo-advertising capability of the dealership you were kind of reviewing for. So do you think the writing or anything, or maybe your opinion shift, or maybe now you feel a little bit more freedom to be harsher?
Good question. Like, and that's actually where we left off last time, and I'm happy to. That's why I want to come back on the show, because we had talked about how I had managed to obtain the cars, you know, through the dealership, but I didn't mention about the press cars. And I think for people listening and people who aspire to become, you know, get in the industry, they'd like to know how do you get damn press cars. To answer your question, maybe we can go back on that one a bit later. But yeah, things. My point of view of the whole industry has changed. My writing has not changed. I do feel a bit more pressure, not from Jalopnik. Actually, Jalopnik is helping me out a lot. The fact of having Jalopnik behind me, backing me up in the industry right now. The thing is that, you know, you go from being a nobody, and I'm still a nobody, but I'm less of a nobody than I was a year ago. And then people start knowing who you are. People start, you know, seeing you in events. They start following you on Facebook. So then you feel this pressure from these people in the industry, because they're like, oh my God, I'm like, now I'm like next to these people. And what if I write something that they don't like, or what if I do something that displeases them or they're offended by it? And Quebec is a very, very close-knit world in automotive journalism. But okay, maybe we can get back on that one later, and I can perhaps get back on the cars, because this is the car show after all. Mm-hmm. So we were saying, yeah, so the press cars. Well, yeah, so I was doing all these reviews through the dealerships. And, you know, as we had said on the last show, I knew it had its limitations. I knew that I couldn't do that forever. And you're right. There was a part of me where I kind of had to, you know, write, be polite about what I said, because they were dealerships and they wanted to sell their cars. The press cars would give me a lot more openness and a lot more opportunities to speak my mind. But then there's still the pressure of having these companies lending you cars. So actually, it turned out to be just as stressful as being with the dealerships. So how did I end up having press cars? That happened at the Montreal Auto Show last year, 2016 Montreal Auto Show. So I had created some content already. Clavey's Corner was just starting on the Kinja blog, but I had five or six car reviews from the dealership network.
Yeah.
So, you know, I find a way to talk my way into the Montreal Car Show Press Day, my first Press Day event, and I get there, and you know, I'm just some dude in the corner with a camera, and all the big guys in Quebec were there, and of course they don't know, and they don't give a shit of who I am, and my mission was get press cars, just get press cars, talk to the people in the responsible press cars. So at every car maker after the presentations, I would just go talk to people and just ask who takes care of the press fleet in Montreal, et cetera, et cetera. Who do you work for? Clavey's Corner, West Clavey's Corner. I have no idea what that is. Oh, it's affiliated with Jalopnik. That's what I would say, you know, because it was a Kinja platform, right? Oh, yeah, Jalopnik. I know what that is. Yeah, let me introduce you to someone. And that's how I would actually talk my way. It was all bullshit, of course. But, and, you know, I got all these business cards. I mean, I got business cards from everybody. I got out of the Montreal car show. I was like, holy shit, I nailed it. This is cool. I'm going to get all these press cards. And, you know, things are going to change. So I start sending emails. And I tell you, like, nobody answered me. Nobody at all. Nobody answered back. I was like, oh, this is bad. But one car maker answered, and it was Honda. Honda was the first car maker who said, yeah, sure, we'll put some cars on your blog. You know, we'll try it out. So that was my first press car. It was an Acura TLX last year. So the ball kind of started rolling with them. And it's always a matter of having the first one, right? That's the hardest part. It's like breaking the ice and convincing that first car maker that you can review cars. So, and you know, we had, I think if I have an advice to give to aspiring automotive journalists, if you want to go out and ask for press cars, you have to have something to show first. You have to have built something beforehand. You can't just get there and say, hey, I want to review cars, lend me a car. They're not going to do it. They're not going to lend you anything. You have to show them, one, look, here's my background, here's what I've done so far. And then you have to find a way to convince them that you have exposure. It's all a matter of exposure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess somebody at Honda liked what I did, and then, you know, the ball got rolling. Then I got Hyundai, I got Volvo, and I used, you know, every time I email a car maker, I always tell them I have these brands already, so that gives you credibility, and, you know, you show them what you've done so far, and then the wheel gets turning. So the more you've done, the more you can open up, and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. There is a... I don't know if I'm talking over you, if I'm just getting a little bit of feedback there.
That's fine.
So there is a point, too, where you get a hold of a manufacturer. This is kind of what I found in my own thing, where maybe they're a little hesitant to give you something, but they give you one of the lower rung things, like, let's say, a Mirage, and they go, you know, if we get some positive notes out of this, this is something we can use down the line, you know. If we know they enjoy this, then maybe they'll enjoy the Outlander, or they'll enjoy whatever. Where, not in that specific example for me, but it's like, if you are willing to kind of play ball with them and kind of not sugarcoat things, but if I feel like if a press person sees that you do an honest, truthful review and you don't hammer cars for stupid, you know, little bullshit, I think that's what a lot of manufacturers are afraid of, where, you know, when the internet kind of like opened up to this automotive journalism, like to the masses, you know, and everyone's asking for press cars and everything, and everyone wants to be the next Jeremy Clarkson. Well, everyone pretends to Jeremy Clarkson, and they start bad mouthing every aspect of the car because isn't this stupid and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm sure if you go look around on YouTube, you see a lot of these people reviewing vehicles and they just destroy every aspect, and no manufacturer wants that. Yeah. You know.
Exactly. You're opening up a whole can of worms here because, yes, there's this thing going on. It's the whole, you know, everybody thinks they're a journalist now. And it's funny you talk about this because I'm in the process of applying to AJAC, which is here in Canada, the Automotive Journalists Association of Canada. And I spoke with the president of the Montreal Car Show, and he was just telling me precisely that. He's like, we have this explosion now of wannabe automotive journalists who, you know, they have a YouTube page and or an Instagram page, and, you know, they think that that's quantifiable. But I think the rules of automotive journalism are still the same. You have to know how to write. It begins with writing. No matter how many YouTube videos you've had, or how many views you've got on YouTube, or how many Instagram followers you've got. Even Jeremy Clarkson said it recently in a Jalopnik interview. It's all about the words. And you have to know how to write. You have to know how to write well. It has to make sense. It has to be factually correct. And, you know, at the same time, give off a good show. Try to find a way to stand out from the crowd. And I believe we did with my appearance and our photography and my foul mouth and my tendency to say things the way they are. I think that we're kind of carving ourselves away in this jungle, right? It really is a jungle right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's, to that point of your unique ability, there's, you know, between your photography, between the writing and kind of the, I hate using this phrase, but the unique voice you bring to it, you know, you definitely don't give off the appearance that you're trying to imitate anyone else, which is, I recorded an episode on Sunday talking about this, but then of course I lost a lot of this. So I'm going to rehash it a little bit, where, you know, it's been a while since I've gone out and tried to find new and unique people to get on the show. You know, when we talked months ago about, or at least a couple of weeks ago about doing this. So, you know, you get out of it and I get back into it, trying to find, you know, people to bring on the show. And I like finding the people who are up and coming and all that. And I find myself scouring reviews and I find myself watching YouTube stuff and listening to podcasts. And it's like, there is so much imitation out there that I don't understand why people don't try and be themselves. You know,
right? You're absolutely right. Yeah. And
no, go on. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And back to what you were asking me about. It's hard. It's hard to remain authentic, and I am feeling a lot more pressure now because, you know, the more you're under the spotlight, and the more cars you're being lended. You're always afraid. Every time you write a review, you're always afraid that they're going to stop lending you cars because of what you said or something you did. Dealing with manufacturers is like walking on packs of eggs, right?
Yeah.
And like right now, I'm preparing, just before we had this call, I was preparing the intro to the QX30, and I'm not going to be polite with the QX30, and I have to find a way to make it look good in a way, because, you know, I don't want the Nissan rep to hate me, right? And ever since the beginning, even the first cars that I get, the first press cars that I have, I've always told myself, no, don't lick ass. Don't be specifically nice to these people because they're lending you a car, because then that would not be me. And that's actually my editor and my photographer, Miles, tells me this all the time. He tells me, I'm happy to have people around me that bring me back to my grounds and tell me, no, just continue being yourself, continue saying what you're really thinking. But it's always stressful. I mean, you send the article to the car maker after, and you know it was positive. But I always send my articles back to them. I always do, because I it's out of respect. You lend me a car, I brought it back, in good shape, clean, full of gas. Here's the article. We worked. We did something. And every time I hope that it passes, right? And I actually had bad news this week with Porsche. I actually got an email from Porsche, and this is really weird. Like 6 months later, I did a Porsche Macan back in October, and no car maker will allow an automotive journalist to go on a racetrack unless it's for a special occasion or you had acceptance to go. All their contracts strictly say that you cannot go on a closed circuit because they don't have the insurance for it. Yeah. No insurance company covers for that, but. We would play these corner. We kind of try to push. We keep pulling the elastic as much as we can, and we dared to go. We have an agreement with Sanair, and we went there with a few cars, Toyota and Honda, and it worked. And they allowed us to go, and they didn't say anything. Subaru as well, because we had some good shots, and it was justified. So I had the Porsche Macan, and we went there with the Macan for photo purposes, and we were on the oval track. Nothing. We're not on the edge of an apex or killing the car. And they wrote back 6 months later saying, we noticed in the article that you weren't on the track. These are against our policies. It's really in our contract, so we can no longer lend you press cars because of that. But I just lost Porsche, right? Just out of something very simple. I just want to take pictures on a racetrack. So it can be very touchy sometimes. Yeah. But yes, there's always this pressure of, am I going to be, are they going to like me? What's more important? My readers, what I think, or what the car makers think. So first is what my readers think, second is what I think, and what the car makers think comes last. Mm-hmm. That's the way I usually think when I write.
Well, it's fascinating, too, when you think about everyone you have to deal with the manufacturer, because you think 6 months goes by, who's reading this at this point? But, some peon probably got this, low-ranking person in the press fleet, review place. He sends it off to someone. It gets reviewed by them, blah, 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 and gets set up and then probably off to all sorts of different departments. And then finally, probably someone in the insurance department went, wait a minute, that's a picture of this. So, I think a lot of reviewers, and I've seen it out there where people are afraid to say anything bad or do anything with the vehicles, pushing them to the limits. I mean, even to the point where I know a lot of people don't you watch these reviews and you don't see anyone slamming on the brakes. You don't see anyone doing hard takeoffs. You don't see anyone, trying to really push the car and see where it kind of breaks down and everything. And I think a lot of that is because there's that mental aspect of, hey, not only do I have to please the person who's in the press fleet, but I got to appease their lawyers and the insurers and all these other people there. So I'm just going to run right down the middle here, and I'm not going to say anything interesting because if I say something interesting, there's a risk that I'm going to piss off this manufacturer, and I don't want that to happen. I think a lot of people look at the press car as the end goal, where really that's a means to an end.
Yeah, and exactly, and it's funny because it varies from one brand to another. Some car makers are very, very cool about it. Some are very, very strict. I was speaking with a General Motors rep in Montreal. Here for the Quebec region, and he basically told me, you know what, Will, I don't care. You guys can say whatever you want in your articles as long as it's factually correct. And I was like, man, this is the way, that's the way all the PR people should be. That's the way, that's what automotive journalism should be. Let us do our job as long as we're not lying, as long as we're not, and that is, by the way, how Patrick George works, Angelopic. He's very categorical on that. You do not change anything in your article. If a car maker requests to change or to remove something, As long as it's not factually incorrect, you do not modify anything in your article. That is a rule of thumb at Jalopnik. And we actually had, I actually had that happen to me, one of my first articles with the CRV. I don't know if you saw it go by. It was the Honda CRV, the big purple one that had like over 100,000 views. That was a funny one because it had more views than a Porsche 911. We actually made a joke about it. And that's the problem.
I didn't get a chance to read it, but I was I did see the little comment. I think it was on the Twitter. So,
right. Yeah. That's the reality of today's automotive industry is that you go on an enthusiast website and a big purple SUV gets more views than Porsche 911. But back to the rule. Yeah. So Honda wasn't happy about a joke I made in that article. Something having to do with the way that there was an uncomfortably long silence on the line when I mentioned I'd put the CRV on Jalopnik. It was just a joke. It was just there for comic relief. And they got back at me on that and they said, well, you know, we don't appreciate that joke because it's not true. It didn't really happen. Could you change it? So I'm like, all right, fine. I don't ask Patrick. I just go in the article and I edit it and I save it. But I tell him after. I say, oh, Patrick, by the way, Honda emailed me and they wanted to change that. And he got pissed. He told me, you do not do this. You do not change anything in your articles unless you made a mistake factually. And then that's when I told myself, wow, this is cool. This is awesome. That's how that's when I realized that I'm kind of protected by Jalopnik. And they're really there for the real stuff. They're really there for the real automotive journalism the way it should be. Say things the way they are. And if the car makers aren't happy, well, the hell with them. So that's the way it should be. But unfortunately, as you said, there are a lot of automotive journalists who are afraid of saying things because they're afraid of losing their access to a press car.
Well, I think it's even pervasive into the, you know, I think a lot of people go, well, it's the independent people who are afraid of that stuff. I think there's, you know, print publications out there, you know, some of the old school stuff where there's, even they sometimes, you know, you can tell they're a little afraid of pissing off some people. It's absolutely fantastic the way Jalopnik treats you. And I've had most of the staff on from Jalopnik. I really do enjoy. I had Patrick George on in the past. I'll have him on in the future. It's such a good, and I don't like the phrase, but I can't think of a better one. It's such a good safe space for like true automotive, you know, enthusiast writing. You know, you can say what you want. The writers say what they want. You know, the comment section is, I think, one of the best comment sections on the internet. I'm curious. So that's a good one for you then. So you went from, you know, Clavey's Corner, which was a very, you know, very popular section on Kinja, but going to Jalopnik and going to that, you know, front aspect and having an article like the CRV article, which was well read, you know, by tons of people. How is it handling the comment section?
Oh, it's you're on Kinja as well, so you're familiar with it. The first article I did was the Subaru Outback, and I remember emailing Patrick and saying, "Holy shit, this is insane!" It's like, how so? I'm like, the comments, dude, the comments, and I was not used to that at all. And it's insane. It's intense. I mean, when you're writing on Jalopnik, you're getting a lot of notifications at once, and you know, in the first article, it's the same thing with Andrew Fales from Right Foot Down. He also writes on there now for Lane Splitter, right? And, you know, I was speaking with him about it, and it can be a handful. But as you said, Jalopnik has probably the best commenters on the internet, so it's fun. It's actually a lot of fun. You want to answer to everybody. You know, there are some trollers, but they're not so bad. You know, they tend to be they're pretty deluded, so it's not so annoying. But yeah, it's insane. But now I'm kind of like used to it, right? So I got an article on Jalopnik. Now I know I'm going to have a bunch of notifications. I just wait until the end of the day, and then I get home at night and I'm about to go to bed, and I open up Jalopnik, my Kinja, and I see like, okay, 100 notifications. Here we go. So I just open it up and I start reading it. I read them all. I really do. And it's really fun. It's a lot of fun to do. But yeah, at first it's just overwhelming. You're like, holy crap. And you got this adrenaline going on. It's like, okay, I'm out there. I'm out there on Jalopnik. People are looking at me, and I could get burnt. I mean, people could hate me, right? But I think that's what Patrick George is there for. He's like the safety net. And, you know, you go through him before everything goes live. And My stuff is edited here. I edit all my stuff here by somebody who checks my stuff. And when I told him this is going to be going on Jalopnik, we decided to work overtime to make sure we were going to deliver a quality product. And but then Patrick is the other filter. And he knows, because he knows what works and what doesn't. He knows what's going to work for Jalopnik. He knows he's really good. I admire him a lot for that. And he just filters it out properly. And he tells you when it's not right. He just tells you. He doesn't go by four different paths to tell you. He just tells you this is not good. Change that. This is good. This I like that. And then it goes live. So, but it's great, right? I enjoy every single minute of it.
He's such a great guy. It's such a great place to be. Is there anything that, you know, better or worse about being on Jalopnik than you thought would be going into it? You know,
better or worse?
I'm trying to think, like, is there anything that is there anything that you found yourself like unexpectedly, you know, doing or like having to deal with getting to Jalopnik, I guess, is the better way to phrase that stupid question.
that's a good question. Well, what I'm impressed to see is how Jalopnik is not popular here in Quebec, how people have no idea what it is, and that's actually funny because when I announced the car makers here that I was working for them, I sent emails to everybody, and I didn't get that many great responses. They weren't negative. They weren't negative, but I was expecting, oh my God, this is awesome. But I just got, great, congratulations, good stuff. You know, I was just like very, like, okay, just, all right. So, but there's something I mentioned earlier in the we were talking about that. Here in Quebec, it's a very, very odd world, automotive journalism. It's very closed in because Quebec is French. They have, everything is localized here. They have big outlets here that dominate the industry.
Mm-hmm. So like French journalists, you know, automotive journalists and all that.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. So to speak and to write in English right off the bat, you're very controversial in Quebec. So, you know, I'm different than most of them, but to come out of nowhere in a car show, and then they're like, who are you? Who do you work for? Oh, yeah, I'm the new guy for Jalopnik. I mean, they have no idea how to react. They have no idea how to react because they don't think it's true, number one. What is Jalopnik doing here in Quebec? And I think that's what Patrick liked. I'm guessing, because, I mean, it's funny how this happened. I mean, I actually asked for the position. I wrote a. I don't know if you saw it on Opposite Lock. I actually begged for it. I made an article asking Oppo if I should work for Jalopnik. And people actually supported me, and Patrick saw it, and he emailed me, and I had been kind of harassing him for a while that I wanted this, and, you know, we had a phone conversation, and right off the bat, I think he liked what I had to offer, and I talked him into the idea of being, you know, penetrating the Quebec market, how it was being dominated by these household brands, and that we can have a lot of fun with this, with Jalopnik, and this is what this is actually the biggest surprise that I have of having Jalopnik behind me and having to pierce this market, being the outsider, the English, the guy born in Quebec who speaks French very well, but decides to write in English, and not for a Quebec outlet, but for an American outlet, which is international. So this is interesting. It's very interesting. I don't know if I'm making friends right now or if I'm making enemies, but it's an interesting adventure so far. It's a
lot of
fun.
Well, it reminds me in a weird way. We had Spinelli on, the founder of Jalopnik, gone off to do all sorts of crazy things. Now he's working with The Drive. When I spoke with him, and he kind of, you know, when they started Jalopnik, the way they, you know, he got a lot of press cars and everything was because flights to Europe were cheap. He was able to go do these things in a space that most other U.S. journalists weren't doing it. And because of that, he was able to make a niche for the site right off the bat. And I see a lot of that kind of reflected in, you know, what you're doing, because you're, you know, native French speaking, you know, you write in English, you have like this outlet, this untapped potential, because I don't think there's a, you know, car and driver guy up there, or a road and track or a motor trend guy, you know, sitting up in Quebec, obviously. So it's it's kind of a space that no one else has tapped. And not that it's the, you know, mecca of the automotive world, but there's a lot of manufacturing that happens up there, if I'm not mistaken. You know, doesn't Dodge have a plant up there? And it's an untapped potential. And, you know, why not, you know, get someone up there with your talent and expertise?
Exactly, and it's interesting because I think that I'm breaking the mold. I'm breaking the habit of, you know, these. And once again, I have a lot of respect. I don't want to talk negatively about the people who work here in the industry, because I've made some friends. I have some people from the Car Guide and from Auto123 who I love working with. I love talking with, having some time with. We're all going to Toronto actually next week to the FCA. It's going to be pretty cool actually. FCA is inviting us all into a bar. So imagine that. It's going to be like a bar with a whole bunch of automotive journalists and FCA people and you know, all like open bar, basically. So that should be pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like, and in the middle of all that, it's going to be a guy from Jalopnik. So, what I want to say is that the industry here is locked into this politically correct way of doing things. And I do believe that we're bringing something new. We're bringing a new voice. We're being more direct. We're being more honest in the way we say things. We allow ourselves to make fun of crossovers while everybody here seems to worship them. So we're bringing something different and, you know, just trying to have some fun along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could probably spend the next, like, hour blowing smoke up the ass of you and Jalopnik, because your writing is absolutely spectacular. The stuff you do for Jalopnik is great. You know, the Clavius Corner stuff beforehand, you know.
Thank you.
I mean, to the point where you got reposted from Drive Tribe, I think, earlier today as we recorded this.
That's great. You saw that, right?
I saw that, yeah. I was like, oh, that's amazing. I still don't know how to use Drive Tribe right, but that's pretty freaking awesome. So...
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming either. Like, they don't tell you ahead of time, right? I just because it's the exiting cars, like a BAMF tribe that we made, and I'm realizing that people really really like seeing me exiting cars. So,
it's a skill you've developed. It's amazing.
There you go. That's so funny. That's the internet for you. I made that tribe with Will Bird and Justin Yu. We did it just for shits and. And, you know, Drive Tribe, the way it works is you need to have 10 followers to be visible, right? So, and we had like 8 followers, and like, screw this, you know. But I just keep putting photos anyways for fun. And then we hit the 10, and then I would see my notifications on my phone. Oh, 15 people. Oh, 25 people, like exiting cars like a badass motherfucker, cool. But then all of a sudden, that was like this Wednesday, my phone just starts popping with notifications. Like, I thought it was going to blow up. 100 people, 200 people. What the hell is going on? Why are these people joining the BAMF tribe? So I'm curious, right? So I go I'm like, maybe Drive Tribe shared something about this. So I go on their Facebook page, and then I see my fat face coming out of Chrysler 300S. I'm like, what the hell? They actually reposted this, and it's going viral. I actually got an email from the people at Drive Tribe to congratulate me that now my tribe has been pushed in the popular section. And I think I've got like 2,500 followers, and it's still counting. I'm still getting notifications from this. And they asked me if I could continue posting photos of me accenting cars. So I called Mile. I told him, dude, I guess you know what you got to do, man. You got to take more pictures of me getting out of the cars. He just started laughing. So, you know, we'll ride that wave. Sure, I'll be that guy.
Mm-hmm. Well,
great, yeah.
I'm curious if that, you know, I'm flashing forward maybe 5 years from now and like, oh, Clavy, that's the guy who gets out of cars like a badass motherfucker. Like, that's all you do on the internet. I could just see it. That's your niche 5 years from now. Like,
that's... Well, that's what I was. I did the Oppo. I did the part two on Oppo. And what I was writing, because I owe everything to Oppo, right? I mean, they everything started there. So I'll never stop writing on Oppo. And I wrote, wouldn't it be great if I just give up the whole automotive journalism gig and just exit cars like a BAMF. Imagine going to like a car show and sitting next to fellow automotive journalists and, yeah, which outlet do you work for? I just exit cars. And imagine that it comes to a point where car makers re-engineer their interiors to make exiting cars like a BAMF more EV or more. That would be like a dream come true, right?
You'd be like the industry insider when you go to the New York Auto Show. Like you're getting in and out of cars, and everyone's watching you. Like, ooh, we took down the side bolster. Is that going to make getting out of the car like a badass motherfucker easier or harder? You know, auto shows would just be great. You know,
right.
But now, there's got to be on that note. There's got to be a car that's impossible to get out of looking badass.
Right? yeah, definitely. I didn't do it with like the Honda Fit, for example, or I didn't. which car would I not look good coming out of? I'm thinking of with the awful.
I think the typical thing a lot of people go for is the smart car, but the new smart car has a pretty decent look to it, and you sit fairly high. So I don't think that's I think a Camry. I don't think you can get out of a Camry looking badass.
I did the Camry.
Oh, you did the Camry. See,
there's a photo of me exiting a Camry. Camry hybrid too.
How about crossovers? Have you done any crossovers?
Yes, I actually did the Mazda CX-3. That was actually a funny one because I do look cramped coming out of it. I look very cramped. Mm-hmm. If I just brought one out on drive try, but I took it off because I'm just wondering. We did one this weekend with the QX30. And it looks weird coming out of it. I'm not sure. So maybe I'll put it back online. But while we had the QX30, we had a beautiful cross. That one's going to be really epic because we have the Quebec flag, you know, in the background with the snow. It's very. I think that one's going to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Buick cross, by the way, what a great car, Buick. Wow, I would never have thought I'd say this about a Buick, but great car.
Well, it's kind of the opposite of what Volvo did, but in a good way, where it's the Americans built cars for Chinese people and then kept selling it here. And it's like the Chinese like leg room in the back, especially, you know, comfortable ride and some nice equipment on the inside. And, you know, the Buicks have that, and it makes their cars better.
So. It's so quiet. Yeah, it's quiet. And it's funny because I was speaking with the GM rep, the car show, and about that, and I asked him, why is GM keeping Buick with Cadillac in the picture? Why are you still trying with Buick? And he looked at me and he said, China. That's why we're keeping Buick. And he explained to me that the Chinese, when they go up in life, they don't aspire to own like a Mercedes or a BMW. They aspire to own a Buick. They really like Buicks over there. And they buy them. They buy a shitload of them. So that's why Buick exists. And, you know, like you said, well, if we're going to sell them in China, we might as well try to do something out of them here, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why I like that Buick is that this week we had the Buick and the QX30. You're in the QX30, and it's this overpriced luxury crossover based on a Mercedes. You're not comfortable. It's not good at doing anything except looking good and being expensive.
Yeah.
And then you get in the Buick, and the Buick is an honest-to-goodness, full-size American sedan with a big, fat V6 up front, front-wheel drive. I mean, if there's one thing America knows how to build, it's big, massive sedans. And that Buick is everything great about these big sedans. It's comfortable. There are no sport buttons. You just get in and floor it. That's it. You just drive it. And I like it because it's an honest-to-goodness American car. So.
Well, I think that's something where we share in common, where we don't like cars that, you know, lie to you about their true purpose, you know.
There you go.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. So, because the last episode we talked about platform sharing and how that dilutes cars, and that kind of carries over to this episode with the, you know, Infiniti and the Mercedes and their platform sharing. And, you know, it's weird when you get that cross-brand stuff. But it kind of brings me to another weird question that I wanted to ask you. So, you write for an American outlet, Jalopnik, now. It's, you know, I imagine most of the readership is in the U.S., and there's probably a lot of international, you know, readers too. But being Canadian, you know, you kind of took the laws of the U.S. when it comes to car regulations and just kind of copied and pasted them. Would you prefer to, you know, have access to those other, you know, parts of the world markets? You know, there's kind of the North American market and then kind of the rest of the world market. And do you think you'd be better off as a journalist writing with access to all those other crazy cars, or do you think it's better because of you're writing for an American outlet to have access to American basic cars? You know?
It's a good question. I wouldn't mind writing for. I just want to make sure I understand your question. You mean, let's say I would be lended a Peugeot, for example, and do a review on that.
Well, yeah, like, you know, if Canada didn't copy and paste America's rules on, like, car safety and all that, and they went with, like, the Euro NCAP as their, like, you know, safety regulation people, so you could get Peugeots, you could get Citroëns, you could get Ladas, you could get whatever you wanted. You know?
Yeah, right. Would I prefer that? I don't know. I like cars in general. I do find that now it makes my job a lot easier because there's not that much conversion to do except maybe go from metric to imperial, and pricing is a bit different. But sometimes I get surprises. I really have to check some stuff. It was because when writing the Outback, I didn't know that only in Canada we have a manual Outback. The Americans don't have the manual Outback. I got caught in the comments by that. Somebody corrected me. And that's when I say, oh, okay, there are some very, like, in, like, significant differences between our market and yours. And so before I start, you know, listing out trim features and pricing towards the end of the article, I always dig deep and I go inside and I go on the website and I build a car and I compare, you know, Volvo Canada to Volvo US, and I notice, okay, the trim levels are different, the names are going to be different, the packaging is different. Look at Lexus. We have no rear-wheel drive Lexus except for the IS here. All the other models here are all-wheel drive, while you guys can get a GS rear-wheel drive, an IS350 rear-wheel drive. That's cool. We don't get that. So, you know, there are some differences. You guys have the Q30, or that's coming out soon. It's like the QX30, but it's not the crossover. It's the hatchback. Anyways, it's another awful car, but it's the front-wheel drive version, not jacked up. We don't have that. We only have the QX version. Anyways, but... yeah, there are some differences, and to answer your question, I think I prefer the fact that we're a carbon copy of America in terms of the car market, because it makes my job a lot easier. I can create similar content for Canada and for the U.S., and it kind of works both ways. So.
Mm. Now, while you're speaking there, I thought of something. Is there, because there's the French-speaking part of Canada, do the buttons and everything have to be labeled in French and English in cars in Canada?
The buttons, no, but the infotainment systems now, all the screens can be changed. Well, you have the language selection, right? So you can change it in French or in English. But no, not the buttons. Here, they didn't standardize that. It's a good point, actually, because we have the language police here in Quebec, and they never standardized the cars. They did it for, like, restaurants and stores and all that, but never for the cars.
Mm. I don't want to give the language police any ideas.
No, don't.
Yeah. It's actually my favorite scene. If anyone's ever seen Canadian Bacon, where they graffiti "Canada sucks" all over the car while they're doing their weird invasion of Toronto, and then the Mountie comes up and says, "Oh, I got a big old problem here. You got to do this all in French as well." So
yeah,
it's such a, you know, you guys, you know, I feel a kinship with the Canadians, being a Midwesterner. Like, I feel like it's just a big old country that's basically like the American Midwest. You get a bunch of snow and everyone's nice, but a lot of y'all packing heat for some reason. So, you know, that's kind of a weird thing, you know, and you're all right there on the border. You know, I'm not sure you're going to invade or not. You know, there's still a bit of apprehension about that. I think Tim Hortons is the, you know, lead way into the invasion front. But, you know, I'd like that, you know, that whole thing. I like Canada. I like, you know, what you do up there. And, you know, there's got to be, though, and I don't think we talked about this last time, a particular maybe pet peeve you have of Canadian drivers, or a particular province of Canada that does some pet peeve stuff to you, you know.
Right.
Do you have that up there?
There are differences in the way Canadians don't drive the same way from one province to another. Quebec is very aggressive. Quebecers on the road, especially around Montreal, I think it's because we have this French blood in us. Quebecers are very—they're very friendly people. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's just on the road, they're very stressed out. They're very like, get out of my way. I'm going to cut you off. And like, a bit like New York or Boston, it has this kind of. I think Montreal on the road I kind of see it as like a mix of New York, Boston, and Paris, all at one. it's free for all. I lived in BC for a while in British Columbia, and over there people are very, very laid back, very relaxed. Just the whole West Coast, right? Like, you know, I think that's like generalized all the way down to California. People don't go fast. Oh yeah, take your time. You can cut me off, no problem. Ontario seems to be fairly well, depends. If you go like in the big city like Toronto, there's fairly a group like Montreal, not like Quebec. The Quebecers are really bad on the road. The Quebecers drive fast. Like, I cannot believe, and that's how, I was actually driving back today. We had a big snowstorm today. Finally, we had some snow. You probably heard me rant about the fact we haven't been having snow for a while. It's pretty bad, but we had a big today. And I was driving back from the eastern townships. It's about 2 hours away from Montreal. I was on the highway. I was driving about 110, 115, about, that was in kilometers, so about 60 miles an hour. It's pretty quick. I was in an all-wheel drive crossover, and people were passing by me like at blistering speeds, like in the snowstorm. And I'm thinking, I was actually thinking about that today because I was thinking about tonight's show. I'm like, I should talk about that to Ike. That is such a Canadian image. I mean, we're in the middle of a snowstorm and we're just like flooring it. Like, we're just like flying here at 120 kilometers an hour. And that represents Quebec really well. People in Quebec are pretty, they drive pretty fast.
It's, oh man, it's, I'm having flashbacks to the Midwest with that, because it's, you know, it didn't matter how much snow was on the ground outside of Chicago sometimes. Like, if someone had to be somewhere, they'd be driving 80 miles per hour, no shit's given, and like no road's been plowed. So,
there you go.
All right. Since you've last been on, we've instituted, you know, I'm trying to make the podcast more of the podcast of record, and, one of the things I enjoy about that is I get to pretend like I'm inside the actor's studio here. So I got a list of questions for you. These are just kind of like quick. Have you seen Inside the Actor's Studio ever?
Yes, I have.
All right, so you kind of get where you'll get where I'm going with this very quickly. So I'll get into my voice here. What is your favorite car?
My favorite car is the Ferrari 288 GTO.
What is your least favorite car?
I'd have to say the Mitsubishi Mirage, man.
Every time. Out of every car in history, the Mirage is the one you like the least.
In history, oh my God, there are so many bad cars out there. I'm going to say Ford Aspire.
All right. I don't know what that... Yeah, that's a good one. Let's see here. What modification trend turns you off? So like donk, stance, you know, brodozer, like that sort of modification trend.
Like a mechanical modification that turns me off?
Yeah.
There are a couple of ones, but I'm going to say blow-off valves.
I get that, like the really obnoxious blow-off valve for no good reason.
Yeah, like on a Chevy Sonic, for example. Or
yeah, that'd do it. Now, what modification trend, you know, do you find yourself kind of attracted to? You know, same, like, donk
stance?
Yeah.
Stance, but not the extremely lowered stuff in camber, like proper stance, like real, like, track stance.
I get that. That's a fairly good one. That's a fairly common one of a lot of the journalists. What kind of car do you dread being stuck behind at a red light?
Do I dread being stuck behind any crossover? I hate all the crossovers. I just can't stand being behind those, especially the seventh passenger one.
Yeah. This is why we get along so well, because that's my same exact answer to that question. every crossover. No one has ever bought, and I have a crossover sitting right below my ass right now, so I shouldn't. But no one has ever bought a crossover because they enjoyed driving or were good at it.
No, right.
Let's see here. What automotive sound or noise do you love?
The induction sound on a naturally aspirated engine.
What automotive sound or noise do you hate?
automotive sound do I hate? Sound symposers, like fake engine sounds.
That's a good. I don't get why that trend started. Did they all these manufacturers spend so much time and effort making the cabin quiet, and then we're going to just pipe in noise for no good reason? Like,
yeah,
yeah, it makes sense.
It's new, I think I have a theory. It's about all the new turbocharging. Turbocharging takes away all the noise from an engine, right?
Yeah.
So you don't really, it just takes the soul out of it. So now they kind of like have to mimic engine sounds to make it feel cool and justify the $50,000 price tag or something.
Yeah. There's that emotional component that the older folks want that they're not getting. You know, I feel like a lot of that is old people can't hear as well and they're used to the sound of a rumbling V8. Like, that's how you know it's a good car, if it rumbles, you know? Let's see here. What profession, other than your own, would you like to attempt in the automotive field?
What other profession I would like to have tapped?
Yeah, like in the world of the automotive, in the automotive world. So we're talking anything from racing cars to building cars and anything in between. Would you like to attempt?
It's actually just today when I brought back that press car. I would like to be the own a place that prepares press cars. Because where I went, it's like a third party that prepares them. And I actually told myself, man, maybe later when I retire from automotive journalism, maybe I'm going to open up a garage that prepares press cars. That's cool. I mean, that's one of the coolest jobs. I like that. You have like your own little warehouse and you have all the press cars there and you keep it all clean. And you have the journalists coming in and, you know, you give them the keys and, you know, set up the appointments. I find that cool.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The more I see those people, the more I interact with them, I'm fascinated by how that works, because it is a lot of third parties who facilitate that around DC too. So.
And the logistics is insane. People don't realize that, but just the business of going to, like, preparing press cars, going to pick them up, scheduling them, the whole logistics behind it is insane. I mean, the amount of time I spend in a week just going to pick up press cars, bringing them back, and just managing all of that, it's huge.
Mm-hmm. And then you got to have, you know, you have to trust the people who are retrieving the cars too. And that's got to just be a whole nother can of worms. You know, can you imagine, like right now, can you imagine trying to find someone? I'm sure the people who drive the cars aren't, you know, I'm sure they're making more than minimum wage, but I'm sure they're not making, you know, something you pay someone over 25 probably. Can you imagine one of them, you know, finding that person who's willing to do that job, who also knows how to drive an automatic and a manual in this day and age? That's got to be next to impossible.
Right.
Let's see here. And then the last, well, there's actually two more, but you already answered one the last question last time. What profession in the automotive world would you least want to attempt?
The least want to attempt. I don't know if you guys have that in the States, but we have, here we call them uncles. They're these retired old guys that work in car dealerships, and they're being used to just deliver cars from one dealership to another. They call them the uncles. I would not want to do that. I find I feel sorry for them. I mean, you're just like the only thing you're used for now is to go pick up a car from one dealership to another. And I don't know. I would feel bad if that would be where I would end up in the automotive chain. I would feel bad. That or a car salesman, maybe a car salesman.
Yeah, that's a good last question, I think, because we're getting fairly close on time here. So, you know, have you ever met a salesman who's been on the job for more than like 5 years who actually still likes cars?
A car salesman that actually still likes cars after more than 5 years?
Yeah.
And actually still likes cars. Well, all the car salesmen I've met, they actually like cars. Well, not you?
No, I in my experience, every person I've, you know, and by like cars, I mean like when I go into the dealership and go, I'm interested in, you know, we'll take the last car I bought, that Ford Fiesta ST, and I ask them a very basic question like, you know, do you know how big the gas tank is on that? They go, no, I have no idea. Well, do you know how big the engine is? Is it 1.6 or is it 1.5? I have no idea. Like, they just could give less than a shit about the cars they're selling. So,
yeah, no, I know what you mean. That's true. Sometimes, often, they don't know what they're talking about. That happens a lot.
Yeah. I don't know, and I'm sure you working with a dealership before this, you know, you've interacted with a lot more people with a lot more drive and desire to do it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was always, yeah, I know you're right. Speaking with them, you know, bringing back a car and then, you know, just explaining to them things. It's like they don't care. Or speaking with a car salesman, as an automotive journalism, you have a feeling that there are things you can't say. It's like you're, I don't know, for example, you'll talk about the Nissan Sentra and you'll say, yeah, it's good, but then the Honda Civic does this, this, and that better than the Sentra. And they'll give you that dead look, right? They'll give you that look as if don't talk about the Civic, you know? Like, it's like you can't talk about the competition to a car salesman. You can't mention the other cars. You only have to talk about his world or her world.
Yeah, it's such a crazy, I don't know, like rules upon a top of rules for no good reason, you know, because the wonderful way car dealership works in North America, for everyone listening who's not here, is the manufacturer doesn't open up the store. It's someone has to open up a franchise of that store. So, yeah. Like, it's always like, you know, Bob's, you know, Ford, you know, here. And it'll be, they sell the Fords and then they, you know, they have to basically buy them from the factory before they sell them to you. And there's this weird thing where, like, certain manufacturers, like, put into laws that you can't have, like, you can have a Ford Toyota dealership, but you might not be allowed to have a Ford Mercedes dealership. And, you know, not that I know that's one of the direct conflicts, but it's kind of crazy that you're not allowed to cross shop ever. I don't know how that works in the rest of the world. I know Canada, you guys kind of got roped into our weird laws for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
With this.
Yeah. Same thing in here, yeah. Yeah. Now they're changing, though, because now we got like, you've got Tesla, which has the corporate selling. Genesis now, the new the Hyundai luxury brand, they're going that direction as well, where you're going to be ordering your car online. And it's going to be delivered to your home. You got Cadillac with a new business model of like just paying a monthly fee, and then you can just bring your car back whenever you want and just take another one. So dealerships, unfortunately, are slowly disappearing. Well, unfortunately, as a consumer, I think we're all happy. I say unfortunately for the people working in the business. I have people in my own family who are car salesmen, so I feel kind of sorry for them. But you know, that's the industry. The world is changing. It's like automotive journalism, right? The world is changing on that front as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never before was there a Jalopnik person in French Canada, and now there is one. So
yeah, and never before was there like a badass motherfucker exiting cars and people loving it. So.
It's oh, that's so crazy to me that that's a thing.
I can't even believe it myself. I wanted to mention before we go, are we really like out of time now? Or
I've been trying to do my best to keep these episodes to about an hour, and we just went over that, but you know, at this point it's fine.
Well, there's just one last thing I want to mention. It's about the press cars, and we didn't cover that. It's how to keep a good relationship with the manufacturer. Yeah. And I think if I was going to give advice to any automotive journalist, like say what you're really thinking. Say the truth. Be honest. But there's a way of saying things. So there's always a way of saying and you know, giving your opinion. But respect the companies that lend you cars. What I mean is, you know, we don't do anything insane with the cars that we're lending. We don't try to jump them. We don't try to break them. We don't bring them like in a dirt road. We'll go on a track. We'll be very, very careful enough to use up all the brakes and the tires. Bring the car back clean, bring it with a full tank of gas. And it's all about how you send your emails, how you communicate with the car makers. There's a story of an automotive journalist here in Quebec. It's a sad story. I'm not going to mention his name out of respect for that person, but he was a young aspiring journalist, and he would get press cards. He was on TV on a couple of local shows, and he pushed the envelope a bit too much of wanting to be popular and wanting to be, you know, doing things different. So he started posting all these live videos of him on Facebook, and they were very, very crappy videos. They weren't fun. They weren't pleasant and very immature. And you'd see him doing these crazy things with cars. Like at one point, he had a Honda Pilot, and he wanted to try it off road. I mean, it's a Honda Pilot for Christ's sake. I mean, it's a car. It's not a truck. Mm-hmm. And he jumped it, and he destroyed the suspension on it, and Honda wasn't very happy. And you know, that there are journalists that go a bit too far, and then they don't respect the car maker, And, you know, and unfortunately, that journalist is out of the business now. He was literally expelled from the business here in Quebec, from the field. You have to remain professional. I mean, this is, you have to realize that these car makers, they're lending you the car, not somebody else. They've decided to lend you the car. They've decided to trust you. They're lending you a vehicle that's worth a quite a lot of money. So you might as well do the best out of it. I mean, I learned my lesson with Porsche, right, with the racetrack. I shouldn't have done that. So you constantly have to remember, and it's easy to get carried away. You get popular, people start, reading your stuff, you get kind of lightheaded. Oh, yeah, I can afford to do this. Just try to stay as grounded as you can and stay true to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you brought me to a point, too, where I feel we should talk on this before we kind of go to where, you started doing the writing. You got out of it. When we talked last time, you got out of doing the writing and you got back into it. And you really made a effort to, do it differently, do it your way. But then also, power just fluctuated in the house. That's not good. You do it your way and make sure that you surround yourself with, good, talented people, your photographer. And you did it. You got to Jalopnik, I think, a way different than people expect you to be able to. You basically just asked to be on the show. You're be on the site, and they gave you a chance. And, a lot of people might look at that and go, well, he just asked, he got lucky, blah, blah, blah. But it's so not true. It takes so much talent and effort to actually get to a point where someone can see, a post like that. Patrick George isn't going to give any schmo a shot. You have to be talented and work on it. And, I don't know, this is kind of a multi-layered question here, so we'll kind of go with, how do you keep yourself motivated to keep doing it back before you were working on Jalopnik? And, how did you decide in your mind that it was the right time to ask, do you think this is something I can do for Jalopnik?
Yeah, that's a good point. I knew I had something going on with Clavey's Corner. Remember on the last show, I said that Clavey's Corner was born out of anger and out of a time in my life where I was, things were going very well. And I've always used that anger in the sense that I have nothing to lose. And I know that I can lose everything tomorrow morning and it won't matter because I can rebuild it again. And I still use that mentality. What's happening now is that now my life is not shitty anymore. And my life is actually doing good and it's fun. And now I'm kind of like surfing this cool wave. But now I have to just use my memory. I have to remember, Will, remember why you started this. Remember what it came from. Because it's not fueled by anger anymore as much as it was when I started. So Jalopnik, I knew Patrick George. Patrick George knew I existed, and I knew that. He had already commented my stuff. He had already told me that he liked what I did. And, when they posted that the road test editor position last summer.
Yeah.
Jalopnik posted that full-time position, and I applied for it. And after applying, I wrote to Patrick, and I told him, I applied, do you think I have a chance? And he wrote back right away, and he said, I like your stuff. And he told me, unfortunately, you're not American, and we're looking for somebody who has an American citizenship. It's going to be complicated with the green cards and all that. We don't have the budget to pay you a green card. So I told him, okay, well, I could offer some freelance work. He's like, yeah, I'm open to some freelance work. But he told me, let me get all this hiring stuff out of the way, and we'll talk after. So, okay, cool, fair enough. So I let it go. And that was before our last interview, actually, like early fall. So when we had that interview, I was just in the process of, writing back to Patrick. I was kind of into that. So time was going forward, and it wasn't, nothing was happening. So I made that post. I just made that post on Opposite Lock. And before I clicked post, I asked myself, what are the consequences of this article? It wasn't rude, it wasn't mean, but it was in your face in the way that I'm capable of doing it. And then I told myself, Will, you have nothing to lose. What's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is that you continue doing Clavey's Corner the way it is and you continue having a lot of fun. What's the best that can happen? Well, Patrick George, comes back to you and you get the job. So I just went out and did it. And that's precisely what happened. I mean, I think when Patrick saw it, I think he noticed the, how people reacted to it. I was actually really, really impressed by it. That's why I owe everything to Oppo, because Oppo actually, they actually supported me. Pretty much everybody, except for maybe one person, but everybody said, yes, you should work for Jalopnik. You deserve this position. I was like, oh my God, okay, so there are actually people who want me to work there. I'm not the only one who wants to work there. And I think that's what Patrick saw. He saw that I was being supported by Oppo and that there were people who actually wanted me to be there. So he emailed me right away. And receiving the first email from Patrick George was great. And I mean, he doesn't do it formal, right? It's just like, hey, what's up? So you want to work for us? So what are you going to bring us, right?
Yeah.
So it's always kind of stressful. And we had our first phone conversation. And the first phone conversation was actually really funny because, Patrick had a cold that day. And he's from Texas. He has a Texan accent. I have my Quebec accent. So, you know, it's hard for me to make up what he's saying. He has trouble understanding what I'm saying. And there was some weird bad reception problems on the line. I couldn't understand anything he was telling me. So the first 5 minutes of the conversation on the phone was each other just trying to understand what we were talking about. And it was really awkward. But we had a great conversation. We touched base on a lot of stuff. We agreed on a lot of things. And he just told me, look, send me the list of cars that you have. Because I already had all my list of cars scheduled for Playbee's Corner. At the moment, I have a press car scheduled every week for the next 4 months. Oh, that's what I told him. He's like, all right, just send me your cars, and we'll go from there. So he's got my list, and he just came back and said, okay, I want this car, and that car. Yeah. And there you go.
I mean, for those of you listening, you know, I've done the press car thing to be... You know, one of the things, you know, this is where I blow some smoke up your ass before we go. One of the things I'm most impressed with you is the ability for you to get these press cars. Because for me to get press cars, and, you know, part of that is because I'm also trying to get guests and interviews and everything else. But, you know, to get the press car once a week is a Herculean effort, you know. You know, trying to get this from that manufacturer and get this from the other manufacturer, get the timing working out, you know, and where do we drop it off? Where do we pick it up? And, you know, each manufacturer is a little different in the way you have to approach them. It's so impressive for you to be able to do that and put out the high quality content you do with the high quality photography and everything else associated with it. And it's so impressive. And I love the attitude you bring to the writing, and it's a different perspective. You're definitely Will Clavey. You know, there's no mistaking that. There's, you know, that's him getting out of the car like a badass. And it's so fun to read the articles, you know. And I'm impressed by the work ethic and all that you were able to put together. And on top of that, just the ability for you to put yourself out there where I don't think a lot of people would have done that, you know, where they're like, well, I deserve this. And this is, you took that very real world, best case scenario, worst case scenario, and kind of weighed that. That's such a important skill that not a lot of people have. And, you know, a lot of people, myself included, are a little jealous of it. it's like, well, if I don't do anything, then nothing bad can happen, but the consequence isn't that bad. And, you know,
but well, it can work two ways, right? I mean, yeah. It can work in a positive way, but it can also hurt a lot. I mean, I've had bad experiences from acting that way, right? The Porsche thing. The Porsche thing is the best example. I went too far. You know, I pushed the envelope to a point where, Porsche wasn't very happy about that. But thank you, by the way. I really appreciate you saying this. And the press car thing, by the way, having a press car every week, it's just a lot of emails being sent. You have no idea how many emails I send in a week. I will insist with the car makers. I will not take no for an answer. I have a situation with Audi right now. You probably saw that go through. Audi will not lend me cars. Audi is really, they're being total asshats. And I'm out there saying it openly that they're being asshats for not lending me cars. But it's a lot of management. It's a lot of emails. It's a lot of prep. And sometimes there's last minute stuff. You know, it's like, oh, sorry, Will, we don't have that car. Something happened. A journalist destroyed it. So I have to lend you another one. So like the Subaru, I had a Subaru Legacy. I was supposed to have a Crosstrek, ended up with a Legacy. Turns out that the Legacy was actually more fun to drive than the Crosstrek. So, but yeah, it's a great gig.
Yeah, no, it's, as always, when I'm talking to you, it's very, I'm jealous. You know, one of my favorite things about bringing people on the show is I get, you know, jealous in the best way possible of the talent and creativity that you put into it, and then the motivation when I talk to you about being able to do it. It's spectacular. And I want to thank you for being on the show again. It's always a pleasure having you. Again, if for the people listening, you go to Clavey's Corner. I don't want to misspell that because I don't have my notes around here. So why don't you spell that out for the folks?
Yeah, it's claveyscorner.com. So C-L-A-V-E-Y, Clavey's Corner. Or you can find me on Jalopnik. Yeah, just enter my name, William Clavey, or in the Jalopnik review section, you'll see. Just look for the crazy Canadian in the car. Usually, I mean, I'm drifting in the snow or something. So that's it.
It's one of the benefits of Canada. Like you said, you had the problem with getting snow, but you know, it's a little more than what we get down here in the States. So
right. It's because when we're used to having a shitload of snow, and this winter we just have like normal abundance. Now we finally have some, but like we're mid-February, but we didn't have anything for like all of December and part of January. So that's pretty scary, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other conversation for another time. I'm just biting my tongue on that one. Will, just hold on just a second. Everyone listening, I'll be right back with you. I'll say goodbye to Will off air, and I'll be right back. All right,
thank you.
All right, that was Will Clavey of Clavey's Corner, Jalopnik. Fantastic guest, fantastic guy. Please go support not only his writing on Jalopnik, but his Clavey Corner stuff. If you like what you heard today, please tell a friend, loved one, coworker. That's the best way for us to grow here as the podcast. You know, the bigger we become, you know, the easier it is for me to convince people to come on the show. You know, sometimes I have to send out Twitter stuff. Sometimes I got to send out information on that. Sometimes it's as simple as someone listens to the show and wants to come on. So the more you tell, the more this gets around, the you know, more people we can get on the show. So if you like what you hear, tell a friend. We're on iTunes, we're on TuneIn, we're on Stitcher, we're on Google Play, or we're on everywhere, pretty much. So there's that. If you want to follow along, you can follow me at Untitled Car Show. You can follow Ryan West, the West Coast correspondent, at Ryanator122. You can follow me on, or me and the show on Instagram and Facebook. If I get a request from anyone, I will do a Snapchat. I don't know if my listenership actually knows what Snapchat is because I don't know what it is. So there's that. Thanks again so much for listening. Have a good night. Have a good evening. Wherever you are, whatever time it is there, thank you so much for listening. Be safe out there.